The Syrian war, a conflict that seems to have no end in sight, but we can trace its beginning. In fact, 7 years ago to the day, pro-democracy protests erupted across the country, inspired by the wider Arab Spring movement. Since then, more than 350,000 people have died and 10 million people, about half of the population, have become refugees, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. Let's first welcome on the line Dana Sliman, Senior Public Information Officer at UNHCR's office in New York. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This might feel like a country that was never at peace, but as I've just pointed out, it's kind of interesting to remember the Arab Spring movement. Can you tell us a bit about the country and what it was like to live in before the civil war broke out in 2011?
So Syria is considered to be, prior to the war, a middle-income country. It followed socialist policies that provided free education and healthcare to all the population. And it was also almost self-sufficient in terms of food production and farming. But there were, that said, there were severe limitations on political freedoms and wide income disparities. So despite the available social services, many Syrians were living in poverty. And it may have been normal for many, but it was not an ideal life for most.
UNICEF estimates 910 children died last year alone. During the course of the war, it's been particularly hard on the innocents. Your organization published a report, didn't it, following the path of a seven-year-old boy from Palmyra. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
It's a Syrian boy who's 7 years old, and he's exactly as old as the Syrian conflict. And we're always trying to bring to life, the suffering of the people and to kind of strip down the numbers, because we're always talking about millions of people on the run, 5.5 million refugees, 6 million internally displaced people inside Syria. So we're always trying to put a face on these numbers and show our audience and the international community that this crisis has not died down, and that the individuals' suffering are human beings just like us. And this boy's story is extremely heartbreaking, but also speaks to the resilience of his resilience, but also the resilience that I personally have witnessed firsthand in my time in Lebanon, where I served with UNHCR, and from 2011 up until recently. He's 7 years old. He's lost his arm had to be amputated because his house was bombed and he suffered an injury and he couldn't be treated inside Syria. His family fled to Lebanon after the situation escalated in his neighborhood, and he's been attending a school for the deaf in Lebanon because he also has a hearing impairment. And just seeing his energy and his positivity and drive and determination really speaks to those same traits amongst all the refugees that I have met, despite unspeakable tragedies and the suffering that they've been through. They all have this determination to move on and find ways to survive and get over whatever they've been through.
What stage of this conflict do you feel we are now at? Are we coming towards the end, or is that impossible to say at this point?
It's very hard to speculate. When I was first in Lebanon and we saw trickles of refugees arriving across the border from Syria, I don't think anyone expected, not UNHCR, the refugee agency for which I work, and not the Lebanese government at the time, suspected that the country would witness the arrival, the flocking of thousands and thousands of refugees, and in the end, over 1 million refugees. And the same, I think, applies to the whole crisis. So it is hard to speculate the stage, but what we know is that here we are entering the eighth year of the conflict. After nearly 7 years of destruction and displacement, Syria remains the largest refugee crisis in the world, and the suffering of the Syrian people continues, and humanitarians are left to pick up the pieces in a dangerous and deadly place.
Yeah, when possible. Dana Sliman, Senior Public Information Officer at UNHCR in New York, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
We'll continue on the subject now with Ahmed Tarajki, president of the Syrian American Medical Society, who was able to take part in a recent meeting among UN Security Council members, where US envoy to the UN Nikki Haley warned that the US will take action in Syria on its own if the Security Council fails to do so, blaming Russia for not observing a recent 30-day ceasefire. That certainly could escalate things. Could it bring things to a rapid conclusion, or rather fuel years longer of conflict? Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for hosting me.
What do you think about this ceasefire from February that seems to have failed?
I don't think the resolution was made to succeed. It was clear in its basic structure that it has loopholes that is that has undermined the resolution itself. And it was clear from the conversation that was taking place at the UN Security Council and around it that, you know, part of that resolution was based on trust, that sides to the conflict did not lived up to that trust, so to speak. And the, for example, it was clear, many sides brought up that Russia, for example, conducted more than 20 airstrikes on Ghouta during that ceasefire resolution. And it was in the statements of the United States, England, and France, as well as many other members, that, you know, this is not a ceasefire if you conduct that many airstrikes, leave alone the airstrikes from the Syrian regime and the other, you know, conflicts or clashes that we've been seeing all along. So the resolution was not made to succeed, unfortunately. It was very visible. And the trust that was supposed to be implemented, so to speak, was not there and continues not to be there.
How bad does this look for Russia, and what was your main takeaway having participated in that UNSC meeting?
Again, as a humanitarian organization, we focus on the situation of the people and the humanitarian situation of the people on the ground. But personally, from observing the conversation that was taking place at the meeting, Russia denied that they violated the ceasefire. They said that they were conducting that within the context of the resolution. Again, tells you that the resolution itself was not built to succeed, and denied any violation of that ceasefire itself, which is a major statement.
From your own expertise as a doctor operating on the ground, can you tell us a bit more about just how serious the situation remains 7 years into this conflict?
So I want to start by talking about Ghouta right now. So to give you like historical background on Ghouta, we all are familiar with the famous sarin, the nerve gas attack that took place in 2013 back in August. And after that, there was the UN Security Council resolution and the agreement between the United States and Russia on stopping those chemical attacks in Syria, which, again, nobody lived up to. But after that attack on the people of Ghouta, Ghouta was put under siege by the Syrian regime. That's back in 2013. So now we are in 2018. And gradually that besiegement was tightened up further, more and more and so on. And the UN has not been able to provide even basic medical supplies to Ghouta. And just to give you a perspective of it, the last two convoys that got into Ghouta were able only to provide food for less than 10% of the people of Ghouta for less than 10 days. And those convoys are very infrequent, anywhere between like, you know, about like one convoy every 6 months on average. So it tells you how much or how bad the situation is, and that's why the UNICEF and other organizations have documented increased incidence of malnutrition for children, as well as increased death from medical situations. Now, because of the escalation that has been taking place over the last month, with attacks on hospitals, for example, the medical capacity inside Ghouta has dropped by more than 60 or 70% compared to where it was last month.
Mm.
Many of the ambulances were struck and they got out of service. So people are dying in the street, literally, from treatable conditions.
Absolutely.
There's no way to evacuate them.
Horrific. Dr. Tarakji, I'm sorry, we are out of time, but you've given us a sense of just how challenging it is. Ahmad Tarakji, President of the Syrian American Medical Society, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.